Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be rejoined today by Jesse Nelson of Diabolik DVD and Cauldron Films. We've got a lot to discuss here. A lot of stuff going on in the world of physical media. Some myths to dispel, but some other things that folks should maybe have their eye on, be worried about. Jesse, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So I called you up for kind of an emergency episode because there's a lot of buzz going around in the world of physical media. Folks who buy Blu-rays, UHD, DVD, even to a certain extent, who were worried about some recent items of news in the manufacturing world. First of all, there came the news that LG was shutting down its Blu-ray manufacturing. They're also shutting down their LCD TVs. It sounds like they're kind of streamlining everything into their OLED LED productions for their TVs. But then there was also news that Sony, and the way the news broke over the internet, as so many things on the internet, was kind of breathless. Sony is shutting down Blu-ray production. No more Blu-rays. And that was incorrect, right? What is actually going on there?
So Sony is, and you know what's funny is that I saw all of these articles. They were all over my feed. They were all over my YouTube feed. They were everywhere. You couldn't get away from them. And it was almost like nobody read the actual article. They just read the headline and ran with it. But Sony is getting out of the blank media business, not the recorded media. So they're not getting out of movies. They're not getting out of games. They're just not going to make blank discs anymore, which is fine. Then you can get blank discs anywhere. And really, does anyone use blank discs anymore? I don't know.
Well, that was the real question I had when I saw this. Like, oh, they're not going to make any more mini discs. Okay, is that a thing people still use anymore? But we can discuss why physical media is superior to streaming, certainly something I believe in terms of, you know, both in terms of image and audio quality and owning it forever versus, you know, whatever, it's out in the cloud. But I do feel like storage media is one place where the cloud has kind of decisively triumphed, or even solid state drives. I mean, My MacBook Pro, I think, has more storage space than the first 10 computers I bought combined. Like, I would be hard pressed to run out of storage space on this. We really are in a different age.
Yeah. I have probably 4 SSD drives right on my desk here that is more data than I've ever had on any computer. It's crazy.
Yeah. So that was, I just want to set the stage there and reassure folks that Sony getting out of the recordable Blu-ray business is not a any sort of like real indicator of the state of health of physical media as we think of it when we think about movies, right?
That right. And, you know, because I do get asked this question a lot and people are always shocked that people do buy movies, but you know, if you look at kind of the progression of the way media has started to disappear, you know, people reading a book on a Kindle and everyone listens to music on their phone or their computer. But now we have, you know, kind of this renaissance of vinyl now. Everyone wants everything on vinyl again. And I think the people that own movies, that watch a lot of movies, in that own big TVs and sound systems, they don't want this media to go away. They don't want it to be a renaissance in 10 years. They want to keep this going. And mm-hmm. and for good reason, because streaming is convenient and it's great having lots of weird things on YouTube and Prime that are nowhere. Always of dubious quality, though. Nothing streaming is ever going to look as good as a Blu-ray. Nothing. It just doesn't do it. I mean, I've run a 4K movie. It looks nothing like a 4K disc. It hardly looks like a Blu-ray most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, for sure. I'll say that I have... If I'm given the option between streaming something on Netflix in 4K that I own on Blu-ray and watching the Blu-ray in my 4K player, I almost always choose the Blu-ray because it's always going to look better. Even you know, upscaled or whatever, it always ends up looking better off the disc, even from a, you know, supposedly lower native resolution medium.
Yeah, almost always. I mean, it's very rarely that I look at something and say, wow, this looks amazing on streaming.
Yeah. What you just mentioned about not wanting to have a renaissance in 10 years is interesting to me because it is something I think about a lot, because I do think there's a difference between a vinyl LP record player and a Blu-ray or UHD disc player in terms of just the amount of technology it creates to keep those things being manufactured, right? Like, in theory, it's not hard to actually make a record player. It's fairly standard analog technology. Like, I'm not saying it's easy. I couldn't do it. I couldn't just go out and make it. But like, it's not an incredibly complex lasers in the Blu-rays and UHD players. However, that's a whole different level of technology. Like, you wouldn't be able to really have that exist as kind of a cottage industry, right? I just don't think that would work.
No, I agree with you. And you know what? I've had turntables that have stopped working, and I was able to get parts and fix them myself. But I don't think I'm going to be opening and replacing a laser. I have an Oppo player that will play Blu-rays, but it won't play 4Ks. It's the 4K. I don't know if the laser's dead, or you can buy a new laser, but I don't think I want it.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that would be, and Oppo is one of the better manufacturers. They stopped making their 4K players, now LG. And that is the one I worry about that much more than I worry about the film labels like Cauldron or Vinegar Syndrome or Criterion or whoever. Like, they're going to keep making the movies. I do worry a little bit about that next level of the technology. If Sony says this is not worth it to us to make these anymore, then I start freaking out a little bit. But yeah, I think we're still a ways away from that.
I think so. I mean, not the last version of the PlayStation, but the regular PlayStation 5 gave customers the option of getting a disc drive or not. You know, because some people just download the games and they don't want the drive. But I don't like to do that. I don't like to download a game because I don't own that game. That game is on my system now. And
yeah,
you know, if I buy a PlayStation 5 game and I hate it, or I play it through a couple of times and I want to get rid of it, and then I can get rid of it, or I can pass it on to a friend, or I can, you know, sell it on eBay or whatever I want to do. But you know, if I download that onto a PlayStation, that's not mine. Yeah. You know, it's still owned by Sony on that machine of theirs.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about DiabolicDVD.com, which is I place several orders a year through Diabolic. Most recently for the Inglourious Basterds UHD from Arrow.
Yeah.
I bought from you guys because
it
was a good price, and it was and you had it too. It was sold out on the Arrow site.
Yeah.
And like nobody. Which is why I always like going to the indie guys. This is going to be a very broad and simple sounding question, but just explain to folks what Diabolic is and what you guys do. I mean, I think everybody, you know, kind of has a basic understanding of a store and how a store works, but like I you know, when they think of I'm going to go buy something, it's I'm going to go to Amazon or you know, whatever.
Sure. So, Diabolic DVD is, you know, we're kind of like the aggregator here. We provide everyone with, you know, a great selection of discs, but not only from things in the US, but from all over the world. And, you know, I'm sometimes very picky about what I'm going to order for the website or not. And sometimes it's real arbitrary. Like I brought in the remake of Speak No Evil, which literally nobody bought, and I sent them all back. And, you know, I said to myself, I don't even know why I would bring this in, because it doesn't seem to be the thing that people come to Diabolik DVD to buy. You know, we've always kind of been more curated to weird and wild things from all over, and art house stuff for sure, because, you know, I kind of curate what I know. So if I don't really know something, then, you know, sometimes it goes over my head. Like anime, for example, I often get requests from people to buy anime, but then when I bring them in, you know, it's sometimes very hit or miss if it sells. And I always don't know, you know, what's worth bringing in or not for my customers. But so, yeah, we're the, like, a one-stop shop. If you're looking for a movie that was released in Germany last year, you can check with us. We're going to have it. You don't have to worry about it shipping from Germany, paying import fees, maybe getting broken, maybe having to ship it back to Germany. Just order everything from here at one shot.
Yeah, a good example, a good fairly recent example of that, I believe. And correct me if I'm wrong. I did not order this because I didn't want to pick it up. But not because I don't like the movie, but Killers of the Flower Moon. Only got a 4K release, I think, in Germany. Was it overseas somewhere?
It was Italy. Yeah, it was Italy, which. Which, oddly enough, there was also an Italian disc of, I can't even remember if it was an Apple movie or an Amazon movie about the girl that's deaf.
Coda,
yeah. So there was an Italian 4K of Coda as well.
Yeah.
Which was really odd, and nowhere else. And then the company that put out the Italian, so in the media world, things are region locked by region, so that studios can sell things in different areas, and technically you can't play them if you bring them in. But for some reason, UHDs are not. UHDs are universally allowed to be played in other territories, but the company that made it screwed up the pressing and locked the UHD, which caused us a big headache because we had no idea until we sold a bunch that people couldn't actually play it in the US, and the company went back and repressed it. And, you know, we carry that now. That's the only place you can get it.
Yeah.
Is from Italy. Yeah.
That's so interesting, and it's kind of wild too. I mean, like, Netflix still is pretty much everywhere, and so they still don't make, you know, physical media available of a lot of their things. But, like, I mean, again, Apple, you know, doesn't release most of their original stuff on disc. I don't think has released anything.
Severance. They just put out Severance on Blu-ray.
Oh, did they just put out? Yeah. Okay. But I guess maybe Ted Lasso too. But it's hard to get the movies that they put out on disc. But they do release them overseas. Is that just because Apple TV Plus isn't in Italy or, you know, Germany or wherever?
I'm not sure what the licensing logistics is and why only Italy. I don't know.
Okay.
It does seem strange.
Yeah, no. It was interesting you mentioned that the Speak No Evil remake didn't pick up an audience from your store. But I guess it does kind of make sense, because I feel like if I'm going to Diabolik, I want the original Speak No Evil. Sure. You know, that's probably what I'm going there for. And, like, I love occasionally just looking at the labels that you guys have. I mean, like, the AGFA, right? The American Genre Film Archive.
Yeah.
Just like the totally most random things you'll ever see in there. And, you know, and more mainstream stuff like Scream and Shout Factory and Severin and Eureka and those guys. But, like, but it is, there is a, there is a wide array of stuff. What has been the most surprisingly popular thing for you in the last, 6 months to a year here?
You know what? Sometimes things just kind of take me by surprise because we don't sell a ton of, you know, mainstream Hollywood movies. It's just not what we do. But, you know, I'll bring in like Smile 2. You know, it did well for us. People seem to really like that movie. They wanted to own it. But, you know, despite their reputation, the three James Cameron movies from earlier last year,
mm-hmm.
So Aliens, Abyss, and True Lies, were huge. Huge.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And just recently the Kill Bill movies and Jackie Brown on UHD, all really, really big for us.
Yeah. That makes some sense. I mean, that's kind of genre adjacent or
that makes more sense than True Lies to me. But
yeah. Well, those were also interesting because they were hard to find anywhere. Those were hard to track down for a while. The camera. Yeah.
You know, the same thing just happened with Kill Bill, though. They seemingly didn't make enough. I didn't even get my whole order of them. And then people were like, oh, Amazon took it down completely. I got to find someplace to order it. They panicked. Mm. And then I had all these orders for it and no product because I'd still had people waiting for pre-orders. And it just did not come in. But now it's all settled. I guess they made them real quick and got them out.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the actual production process here in a second. So don't let me forget about that. I want to go back to that because it is interesting. But the Cameron discs are fascinating because they were kind of controversial. There was James Cameron, of course, is a tinkerer. He likes to tinker with his things. Not in the way that Ridley Scott's a tinkerer, but he likes to just add. He just wants to add more things to his movies. And I'm fine with that because you get a theatrical cut, you get a extended director's cut or whatever. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. James Cameron is a different kind of tinkerer. He likes to improve things. He wants to get rid of grain. He wants to, do all sorts of stuff, which is very controversial amongst our sort of person, our cohort.
You know, I think they have a term for it. The verb is he Lucas'd them.
That's fair. It's funny because it's less, it's interesting. It is less egregious than that, but it's the same thing where you can't get the, theatrical cuts of the Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy anymore. They're just impossible to track down on the legal market.
Yeah. I mean, they're easy to find, otherwise, but we had a situation a number of years ago where, we were going to screen, episode 4, 5, and 6, and we had tracked down 35 millimeter prints of the original versions of them. And we got the rights to screen. We got the rights to screen the three movies. We paid them the rights to it. And then, they came back to us and said, you can only show these if you show our digital versions. You can't show any other version. So we were, and listen, just between us, we weren't going to tell anyone that we were going to show the other versions of the movie. It was just all implied, but
sure.
It wasn't even like they got wind of it. It was just like, you have to show the best version possible, which is our DCP versions.
Right.
Which,
Yeah. Kind of defeats the purpose.
Totally.
Yeah. And you're did you get angry returns on those discs? I'm just curious what the response was from customers, or was that one of these situations where, like, kind of caveat emptor, buyer beware, you know what you're getting with James Cameron UHD.
Yeah, I definitely got you know, you get these customers that somehow hold you responsible for the sins of Cameron, and they, you know, they want you to take back their used disc now because they're unhappy with it. But I mean, what am I supposed to do with it? I can't send it back. It's just, you know, you're unhappy with something I didn't produce, which, you know, granted, I stand behind what I sell, but I can't be the person that watches everything and warns people not to buy it because, you know, maybe you're not going to like the grain structure on the movie.
Yeah. And I feel like, look, again, I feel like if you're buying movies from you guys, I feel like you're a more educated physical media consumer, probably. You should be at least modestly aware of some of this, some of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
I agree with that.
So you do produce movies, or well, you do produce home releases for Cauldron.
Yes.
Cauldron Films. And I wanted to discuss, there's I literally, like, an hour before we taped this, there was an announcement of a new UHD Mad Foxes, which looks pretty interesting. I might look into picking that up too.
This is your
guys' second UHD, right after City of the Living Dead.
That's right.
Now, last year, year before.
I think a couple years now.
It's so funny. I was looking at the American Rickshaw disc. I was like, God, I just picked this up last year. Oh no, that was like 4 years ago now. It was like three, four years ago.
That was the first film we licensed. So, and we had to renew it last year if we wanted to keep it. So we renewed that one. It was 5 years we had that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, walk us through the process of what that is like. So you get the negative, like, explain to me like I'm stupid what happens when you say, all right, I want to make a UHD of Mad Foxes. Go. How do I do it?
Well, you know, first of all, I have a partner in all this. My partner, Brian Izzy, who's not involved with Diabolik. He and I do Cauldron together, but he is kind of the beating heart behind Cauldron. You know, I'm the guy that I look around for licenses, although he does too. That's, you know, I'm not taking that away from him, but that's what I like to do. I like to look for licenses. And I make sure that things come into my warehouse here and things are out the door and out to customers and, you know, also work on getting extras done. This is not answering your question at all. So there's lots of steps to getting a thing out the door. And it's, you know, it's seemingly never, it's never the same twice so far for us. But basically what you need to do is, you have to find out who owns the license to a movie.
Let's stop there, because you say, when you say look for licenses, what does that mean? When you say, like, here's a movie I like, how do you determine if anybody has the rights to produce home or video versions of it?
It's a good question. And it's a lot of times a lot of emails that don't get returned. You know, phone calls to numbers that don't exist anymore. And same with trying to find people to talk about the movies. When we first started working on American Rickshaw, which was the first thing we put out, it stars Mitch Gaylord, who, you know, people of my age know Mitch Gaylord as world famous gymnast, who you know, won a bunch of gold medals and then decided he wanted to get into an acting career, and it never really worked out for him. So I started looking around for the guy, and I found him and left a couple messages for him and never got a hold of him. Finally answered an email that I sent and just said, yeah, good luck. I never want to talk about that movie. And that we were going to put that on the box. It was going to be the Mitch Gaylord pull quote, and, which is a shame because, you know, I don't know if he was embarrassed by it. Maybe. You know, I never heard Donald Pleasance be embarrassed by any movie he was in. But it would genuinely fans of the movie, it would have been a good conversation and people would have watched it and enjoyed it. But
yeah,
you know, but so anyway, finding a license, it isn't easy, you know, unless it's something that was released by a big studio. And even then, sometimes you have this studio ate this studio and now they own these films, but not these films. And these films went, to someplace else. You know, famously, Bristol Squibb Myers, who's a pharmaceutical company, produced a bunch of movies in the 70s. And there's a few, Stepford Wives and, I can't think of what there's a couple of them, and they don't want them out. They don't care about them. So, you know, people have tried to get those things from them and they don't care. Yeah. They did do a couple of movies. Like, I believe that they were, part of the money behind like Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, but then that went to a studio and the studio had some rights and
yeah,
I don't know how this all works. Sometimes there's a lot of craziness, but that's available on home video, whereas Stepford Wives, no.
Yeah, no. That's interesting. The process is fascinating because you definitely wind up dealing with a bunch of lawyers and and all that sort of thing, which is kind of interesting. Let's talk about the actual production of the disc, because again, like I said, you guys have put out 15 or 20 movies now, something like that, right? Is that about right?
Yeah. I kind of lose track of what's actually out in the world, and then, you know, we have a company that we're involved with called Neon Eagle, which releases kind of sleazy Asian movies. So, you know, sometimes I get confused on that actual number, but it's right around 20, I guess, with everything.
Yeah. So this is the second of the UHD discs. I just asked because I'm always kind of interested in like how you make the decision to produce something in Blu-ray versus 4K, because it feels like, you know, people in our community think 4K should be the standard for everything. Like, why are you putting out a Blu-ray? I want to get this on 4K. But like some movies, it doesn't make sense to do that. It's more expensive. I'm just curious what your whole thought process is with these movies.
There's a bunch of things involved with that. And sometimes there's a lot of conversations internally about, you know, what is this going to be, a UHD or is this going to be a Blu-ray only? And, you know, it comes down to a lot of factors. First of all, it's much more expensive to scan something and work on something that's in 4K. You know, it's a bigger file. There's more resolution. So, and sometimes, you know, we pay to have the 4K scanned and then we work on a 2K file because we know we're not going to do a Blu-ray of it. Or I'm sorry, we're not going to do a UHD of it. So there's no reason to work on the 4K file. 4K also, you know, we work a lot on 50-year-old movies that weren't necessarily stored in a studio vault. And when we have those things scanned, sometimes there's just so many weird, you know, you can clean up dirt and sometimes scratches can be cleaned up, little marks, but like some big scratches, or if the negative had been folded, which is something that we came across when we were working on the Lucio Fulci movie Contraband, parts of it had just been folded or written on with a grease pen. You know, we knew that even if we clean that stuff up, it was really going to show on a UHD. And that was something that You know, my partner Brian is really the person to speak on all this, because 98% of that work he's either doing himself or overseeing it. It's very rarely that a studio sends us a fully restored scan that doesn't require anything to be done to it. So he's the person that is either working on it himself or overseeing another company that's doing that. You know, over the years, he used to do everything from cleaning and encoding the disks and building the menus and, you know, getting the whole file ready to actually drop on the disk. And he stepped back from a few of those things that we outsource, but he still, even the stuff we outsource, he is making sure it's done to his specifications.
Yeah. Yeah. And the production of disks is in a weird and interesting place right now, because my understanding is most of the actual pressing plants are in Mexico or South America. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's big plants in Mexico, but there are some companies that do make discs in the U.S. And I am honestly not 1,000% sure that some of those companies don't work as kind of like a broker and have the discs made elsewhere and kind of bring them in and assemble them for you. So I don't know that. And it's not something that would, you know, most people would probably admit to, but
yeah.
You know, if you're having things made directly in Mexico, which has an actual plant, I'm concerned about these tariffs.
Right. Well, that's what I wanted to ask.
Because yeah.
The tariffs are, so this is, for all the talk about recordable Blu-rays and, you know, the LG players, et cetera, the thing that does seem to actually be most likely to affect consumers of physical collectible media is these tariffs, which are going to make everything more expensive.
Yes. Yeah. You know, when you consider all these pieces that go into making a disc, you know, the discs, the plastic case, having the covers printed, if you're going to have a booklet, and you know, everybody lately really loves, you know, a slip cover, which for people that don't know is basically just a cardboard sleeve that you put the plastic case in that sometimes has different art or, you know, alternative art, sometimes the same art, but it's, you know, it's something that looks nice on your shelf and people consider that a premium. And there's also different levels of, you know, there's a thin cardboard and then there's a thicker cardboard. And then there's like almost like a little, its own little box, which they call a rigid slip box. You know, those things get printed in China. While I'm sure there are people that print them here, you got to keep these prices down on these things. I hear this all the time about how I hear this from both the Cauldron side of the production and the Diabolik side, that we live in such a great, you know, a golden age here of physical media, of movies that have never been available on home video at all, or haven't seen the light of day since VHS or DVD. There's so much these days that it's hard to keep up with it all. And as prices keep going up, there's a concern here about not only how many things are coming up, but how much these things are going to be. And if we're adding extra taxes and, you know, the tariffs to these things, you know, where are we going to be 6 months from now? Because no one's paying for those tariffs except the end user, no matter what anybody says.
Right.
It's all going to come down on the consumer because no one's going to eat it.
Right.
No.
Well,
no,
somebody's.
Yeah.
I'll
no
tell
one's
you who's going to eat it. It's me.
Eat it.
I'm gonna eat it when I buy a when I buy a 4K disc that's now 20% more expensive.
Yeah,
that's who's gonna eat it. So
yes,
I'm excited for that. That's gonna be great. Love trade wars. Love them.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And people that keep thinking that the country that's producing the items are the ones actually paying the tariffs are gonna be in for a rude awakening, because it's just not the way it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that cheery note, I love talking to you. I love talking to all the physical media folks, because it is a reminder that there is a small but still pretty robust, you know, market for this sort of thing. Let me ask one last question, I guess, before I go to my exit question is, are you noticing let me backtrack. When I try to explain to people how the physical media market works, I always remind them that DVD still makes up the majority of discs sold.
Yeah.
DVD still makes up the majority of discs sold, most often by like a fairly wide, like a 2-to-1 compared to everything else.
Absolutely.
It's still the biggest segment of the market. And everybody all of my friends kind of look at me with this blank expression of horror on their face. Like, people are still watching DVDs? And yes, that is still. But again, the segment of the customers who are going to Diabolik are I think probably in the collector market more than I would assume, my question, I guess, is for you, I assume your percentages are kind of flipped on that it's majority Blu-ray 4K with some DVD sales.
If something is available on Blu-ray or 4K, and there's also a DVD that is announced at the same time, like, for example, the recent announcement of the Russ Meyer movies coming out on UHD, there's DVDs of them. But when I'm selling 3-to-1 of UHD compared to Blu-ray, no one's going to buy a DVD from me. I don't even stock it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of those discs in particular, the UHDs come with a Blu-ray too. So for a few bucks more, you're getting both formats. And, you know, I do hear from people sometimes, like, I only need one disc. Well, I don't, because, you know, in my house, I have a UHD set up in one room, and in another room, I don't have a UHD player. This is stupid, and I have to explain it to people, but in that room, I have a 3D TV, and I don't want to get rid of that quite yet. And it's not 4K, so I can't play UHDs on that TV, so I have a UHD player in the one room and a Blu-ray player in another room. And sometimes I watch movies in one room and sometimes the other. And sometimes it depends on what format I have that I'm going to watch it on.
So that's interesting though. You're saying you say you sell about 3-to-1 4K to blue.
On some things. Yeah. If it is, a Blu-ray UHD combo pack. It's got both discs in there and it's a couple dollars more. Yeah, it's not even close. And yeah. Sometimes if I bring in an import that is both a combo pack or just a Blu-ray, the Blu-ray doesn't even sell at all. Like, I sell a few copies of it. It's just there. Everyone's buying the combo pack.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. I mean, especially if you have a 4K player, then why would you buy a region locked Blu-ray? Of course, some of us sickos have the region free Blu-ray player, but that's a different.
Yeah, that's another conversation.
That's a different conversation. I always like to close by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If you think there's anything folks should know about the state of the industry, what you guys do, what you're selling, what's going on, what should folks know that we did not discuss here today?
Well, we did discuss. We just announced a couple of new Cauldron titles, and they're available at cauldron-films.com, and also at Diabolik DVD. You know, some people like to order from Diabolik because they can put other stuff in their cart too. But you know, we love to get the business straight onto Cauldron as well, because you know, all that money just goes into, you know, not only keeping the lights on, but we had a discussion today about how much more money we just keep putting back into getting new movies and keeping things going. And, you know, that's just really our goal, is to keep finding great movies to put out. So that was the big news of today. We also have, there's also a Cauldron Films box set of what's called Bravado Giallo, which was four made-for-TV movies in Italy, directed by Lamberto Bava, who's famously Mario Bava's son, but also made lots of great movies on his own, such as, everybody knows and loves Demons. So it's a set of four movies that he made for television, but, Italian television seems to be, even in the late 80s, much more wild than what was going on in the U.S. In the late 80s.
Yeah.
And, other than that, we just, there were so many great companies finding such great gems. Fun City Editions, Deaf Crocodile, who we have a relationship with because we do fulfillment for them. Mm-hmm. But they're them, all of these weird Eastern European animation and folk horror movies that I really recommend taking a look at what Deaf Crocodile puts out. Radiance Films, which is run by Fran, who previously was one of the higher ups at Arrow, mm-hmm. and split off and started his own label, but is just putting out such a wonderfully curated selection of movies, especially the Japanese movies that he's putting out, which I really, really like, and really like what he's been choosing for his label. So really the point is that there's so much great stuff. Whatever you like, somebody's doing it right now.
Yeah. And again, DiabolicDVD.com is a great kind of clearinghouse to go and just poke around. I like to go to the labels page and just kind of scroll through there and see what all of the individual labels are putting out. I'm not interested in buying 90% of them, frankly. Like, it's not what I'm into. But I like to see what's available, because you never know. Sometimes something sneaks in there and you're like, oh, that looks interesting. What's this?
Well, there's a good example of that. I am not a Robert Altman fan, except for Popeye. I keep trying to watch Robert Altman and he doesn't work for me. It's just not for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But recently, Radiance put out a movie called Yokohama BJ Blues, which is a Japanese remake, loose remake, I would say, of Altman's The Long Goodbye with Elliot Gould, which I like that movie. The Long Goodbye I like. As far as Altman goes, that is one of the films that I did like. But I love Japanese movies, so I was like, I really want to. I'm going to watch this. Usually when I'm watching a Japanese movie, I pick out the wildest and weirdest thing I can find, which usually is not too hard. But this movie was terrific. I just thought it was so great from beginning to end, with a really cool soundtrack and a weird kind of Yakuza subplot that I wasn't expecting. And, to your point, I can't watch everything. I can't keep a copy of everything. It's just too much.
Yeah.
And maybe I would have passed that over, but something caught my interest. I like the label that puts it out. I like what he's curating, so I wanted to give it a chance.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about what's going on in the industry right now.
Yeah. It really is a very real boom time in, high quality lost gem sort of things. It's interesting what's happening at the moment. That's why thank you very much for coming on, Jesse, to talk about that.
Thank you. Yeah, I love being on.
Again, my name is Sonny Bonch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. See you guys then.